What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Justice Richard Bernstein of the Michigan Supreme Court, a blind judge who has completed 18 marathons and a triathlon. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. The Iran nuclear deal controversy raged all summer. And now that Congress is returning this coming week, it'll take only a little more time for the battle to reach its climax, which will prove to be, in my humble opinion, very, very anticlimactic. I predicted back in mid-July, if you recall, when President Obama first announced the nuclear agreement between Iran and the 5+1 nations, that nothing would stop it from becoming law. And now, after AIPAC spent $40 million fighting it, J Street spent its first $2 million supporting it, and the rest of us received endless pieces of information about it, it will become international law. This has proved to be a gigantic tempest in a teapot, entirely predictable and, well, very strange. For those of you who've had the good fortune to live in a news-free bubble, or who just returned from echo camping in the forests of Borneo, there was an agreement announced July 14th. In that deal, international bad guy Iran, sponsor of anti-Western terrorism from Afghanistan to Arizona, including Syria, Gaza, Yemen, Egypt, Libya, and many other places in between, led by extreme Islamist Ayatollahs, Iran has agreed to open up its extensive nuclear program to Western scrutiny. It is also supposedly said it will stop making fissionable nuclear fuel that could be used for bombs to place on its many international ballistic missiles and aimed at Israel, Europe, and eventually the great Satan, the United States of America. In addition, Europe, the UN, and the US agree to lift the crippling economic sanctions that were making life very difficult for Iranians without stopping the Ayatollahs from trying very, very hard to make atomic bombs. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Iran getting nuclear weapons is one of the worst things that can happen in this world, just ahead of ISIS or Hamas getting nuclear weapons, or Donald Trump being elected president. In this, I agree wholeheartedly with the Israeli public and most of the sane people in the world. I find myself also agreeing completely with Saudi Arabia for the very first time ever in my 54 years of life, which is perhaps the most amazing thing of all to emerge out of this Iran nuclear fiasco. The issue with this deal is not whether it's a good idea. Frankly, I don't really know. The debate revolves around whether this agreement will slow Iran down on making a nuclear bomb or whether it will make it easier for them to do so. Most people, including those who oppose the deal, think it will slow the process a bit. Most people, including those who support the deal but hate the idea of a nuclear-armed Iran led by Ayatollahs, think Iran is likely to get a bomb pretty soon, no matter what. And no one really thought that all of the ads and speeches and YouTube clips and the great PR weapons that were trotted out were going to make any difference in this whole thing at all. The part of all this I find so very strange is that it was abundantly clear from the time the deal was announced that all that President Obama had to do was round up a veto override-proof minority in Congress to support his decision to make the deal, and it would become law. And he clearly was going to be able to do that. This was true from the start. No matter what the Senate did when it came back from its summer recess, the Iran nuclear deal was going to take effect. In fact, there was some belief that even if the U.S. did pull out of the deal, that is, if Congress voted by more than two-thirds to disapprove the treaty, the other nations would just go ahead and lift the sanctions anyway. So why in the name of all that's high and holy did so many major Jewish organizations, including the Prime Minister of Israel and his major opposition, both And here in America, every pro-Israel group from the far right to the center and even some left of center groups, why did they all work so hard and spend so much to fight this treaty? And on the other side, why exactly did a number of left-wing or left-center Jewish groups work so hard to support the president on the Iran treaty? Why did Jews on both sides of this clash spend so much effort demonizing each other about it? The strange residue of this fierce fighting for a clearly lost cause will linger long. Why did we see so many American Jews passionately devoted to defeating a treaty that couldn't be defeated? Why did other American Jews work so hard and expensively to support a treaty that was inevitably going to become law? I have a couple of theories. First, I think that AIPAC and the strong Israel supporters felt that they needed to rally their troops against the Iran deal because it never hurts to increase the passion of your own base. I'll bet that for every dollar of advertising and lobbying money that AIPAC and other pro-Israel, anti-Iran treaty groups spent on their campaigns, they raised even more from their passionate supporters. And they created some newly passionate adherents. It's an old political trick. It's how you win even while appearing to lose, and it has served many a politician better in defeat than victory. And the Jewish groups that rallied behind the president? I'm not saying they understand the treaty better or are more principled. I actually think they mostly saw a prime opportunity to broaden their appeal and gain traction with a large percentage of American Jews, especially younger ones and more liberal ones, over this issue. One which they were almost guaranteed they would win. It gave them a great opportunity to appear both patriotic and optimistic without really risking much. In any case, the focus seems to be shifting now to what kinds of olive branches the Obama administration will hold out to the American Jewish community now over its apparent victory. It's over, and now we can enjoy peaceful celebration and hope that the crazy Iranian mullahs don't actually try to use their nuclear weapons during our lifetimes. Perhaps now we can move on from the Iran deal, heal the self-inflicted wounds in the American Jewish community, and prepare for a new year of 5776 that begins a week from tonight. I certainly hope so, and I also hope that we may have learned an actual lesson here. The potential to create unnecessary fratricide in the Jewish community outweighs the dubious virtue of posturing for political gain, even on an important issue like nuclear Iran. And now it's everybody's job in the world to keep an eye on whether Iran actually lives up to this agreement. Well, late last night, we formally began the period of return and repentance, the penitential season, with our Slichot services, Slichas. Moving on to the coming of the Jewish New Year with Rosh Hashanah, just 7 days from tonight. And here to play us in this morning is a little bit of the prayer Anenu, Answer Us, from the Slichot services. It's sung by the master cantor Yitzchak Meir Helfgott.
Anenu, Aviria, Kuvan, Venu. Anenu, Misegavim, Ois, Anenu. Anenu, Ezra, Shevotim, Oy, Anenu.
Was the extraordinary Chazan Yitzchak Meir Helfgott live at Slichot services singing Anenu, Answer Us, God, in preparation for Rosh Hashanah, a week from tonight, and Yom Kippur, the following week. When we come back in a few moments, we'll meet our extraordinary guest, Justice Richard Bernstein of the Michigan Supreme Court. He's a blind judge who has completed 18 marathons and a triathlon, and he'll be here in Tucson soon. His remarkable story will amaze and inspire you when we return right here on Too Jewish.
Everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 16th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. Call 327-4501 for more information and to register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. The classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year in Suarita as well. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, the whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class. And we're thrilled to offer American Sign Language Interpretation, ASL, for one of the sessions. Remember, there are no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email mila@templeemmanueltucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501. A fun way to learn about Judaism. Don't miss it.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Justice Richard Bernstein, is a member of the Michigan Supreme Court and perhaps the most unusual jurist in America. They say justice is blind. Richard Bernstein is blind. He's also a 18-time marathoner and really an extraordinary figure. We're delighted to have him here on Too Jewish. Good morning and welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you, and I'm very much lucky, looking forward to being in Tucson with you as well.
We are too. You know, the obvious question, I'm sure that there were many naysayers when you worked your way up through college, through law school, to working as an attorney. How is it that you managed to accomplish all this?
Well, you know, it's a great question. I think a lot of it really does come from a spiritual belief that you have to believe that everything happens for a reason and that everything happens for a purpose. We might not know what that reason or purpose is, but you just have to believe that you're part of something bigger and grander than yourself, and things usually happen for the best. And I think that ultimately it's if you live life with a true sense of mission and passion, things have this wonderful way of coming together and always working out the way it's meant to be.
I'm reminded of the great rabbis of the Talmud, maybe the greatest ancient judges and lawyers in history, who literally memorize the entirety of Jewish law. That's sort of how you have to do things, isn't it?
That's exactly correct. So I basically have to internalize and memorize all the materials that are put before me. So when we go to conference to decide which cases we're going to grant leave to, there's usually about 26 cases that we have to decide on at every conference. In order for me to participate at an equal footing to that of the other justices, I have to literally memorize and internalize all the material. So it takes about 12 to 15 hours a day of preparation. But when I go into conference, because of the amount of work that has been done prior, I am ready and able to discuss every case on an equal footing to that of my fellow colleagues.
You would have to be, although one area of law you specialized in before becoming a judge was the area of inclusion. Inclusion not just for those who have seeing challenges, but a variety of other challenges. Do you feel you relate more obviously to those?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, in the general sense, ultimately, it's our experiences that define who we are. And I think that in my situation, I believe I've been blessed to have had to face certain challenges, certain difficulties, and certain hardships. But I really believe that that really goes into creating the person that you ultimately have to be. So when you have that kind of hardship and challenge, what it does is it allows for you to have a greater sense of connectivity, a greater sense of understanding. But most importantly, it gives you the greatest blessing that I believe Hashem can bestow. It's the blessing of empathy. And I really believe that good judges should have that skill set, that ability to try to understand what it's like to be in someone else's shoes, and that ability to be able to understand the challenges and hardships that those who come before us have to face. Because ultimately, that is a sign of true justice.
We will talk much more with Justice Richard Bernstein when we return. Fascinating guest here on Too Jewish. Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-Award.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio@gmail.com. Or visit our website at TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through streaming at the website, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We now have 14 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our special election year and more feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report, in-depth coverage, unusual stories, and the finest opinion on the air as we choose the new leader for our nation. You are no doubt aware of the huge controversy swirling around leading Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's use of a personal email server when she was Secretary of State. In response to the criticism, huge numbers of her emails have recently been released to the press. While combing through the most recent Hillary Clinton email dump of 7,000 messages, a non-political but potentially highly controversial message stands out. This email was sent to both Jake Sullivan, one of her top advisors, and Richard Verma, then Assistant Secretary of State for Legislative Affairs. It is brief. The date stamp is March 5th, 2010. The body of the email is just five words. It reads, "Where are we on this?" The subject line says only, "Gefilte fish." Well, for those of you who are relatively uninitiated into the wonders of Jewish cuisine, gefilte fish is a chopped, sweetened, stuffed, and baked fish dish served cold prior to the main meal at holidays like Rosh Hashanah and Pesach, Passover. Some Jews love it. Lots of Jews are not so crazy about it, but eat it out of a sense of religious duty. But what in the name of holy horseradish did the non-Jewish Secretary of State of the most powerful nation on earth have to do with gefilte fish? Well, apparently 5 years ago, just before Passover, a huge shipment of 400,000 pounds of frozen fish was held up in Israeli customs on the way from the U.S. to Israel. The fish was carp, traditionally used to make gefilte fish. It had been farmed in Illinois and was going to be hit with a 120% import duty by Israel unless an exception was made. Hillary Clinton, it seems, played the foreign gefilte fish hero. She was fulfilling a promise she had made to then-Illinois Representative Don Manzullo, a Republican who was fretting about the potential tax. "Seems to me like one of these issues that should rise to the highest levels of our government," she said at the time. "I will take that mission on." She did, and Michael Oren, then Israel's ambassador to the U.S. and a past guest of Too Jewish, intervened. Soon, nine containers full of frozen American carp were being unloaded to make gefilte fish for Pesach in Israel. Well, I don't know if the Israelis properly thanked Hillary. I mentioned that not everybody loves gefilte fish, after all, but this was, for some Jews, the email that saved Passover. And maybe it will leaven some of the concern over the secret content of Hillary's emails. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our Mivi Na on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And I hope you're not too tired from staying up from Slichot last night. BDS, the BDS movement, has been coming for a long time, and mostly it hasn't succeeded in its efforts to boycott or sanction Israel. Almost all of its efforts have been either defeated or have been ineffectual. That might be changing. It seems to be gaining momentum, gaining steam. It certainly has worked as a blacklist, not just on Israeli artists, but now Jewish artists. If they don't say that they think Israel is wrong, then they get kicked off of programs, like happened to Matis Yahu in Spain a couple weeks ago. Tell me about the response in Israel to the BDS movement now.
Again, I know we talked about it and we said that probably it won't affect the Israeli economy, and we won't, you know...
Unlike, say, the Israel boycott of the 70s, which really did have a serious impact, not so much now.
But right now, it's a huge, like, it's a hot topic, because Israel government that for many, many years thought it's, you know, just, you know, nonsense that you don't need even to pay attention. Now I understand that we need to defeat this, you know, phenomena and to understand that it's really, really create the negative, I would say, monitin. I forgot the word.
Well, it creates a negative atmosphere.
And very negative atmosphere that leads to all kind of, you know, ripple effect of, you know, how nations that never even heard about Israel or couldn't care less what's happening in now, like...
have a terribly negative perception of Israel.
Yeah, they already decided that, you know, they become an expert about Israel and they are promoting BDS. And what I want to say about it, and that recently I found two institutions. One of them, it's led by Gerald. He's a professor, of course, in Israel, but he's an American who made Aliyah. And what he's doing is his organization called NGO, Monitor NGO, and he's
Monitor NGO.
Yes, and he's
NGO, of course, non-governmental organizations.
Yes, and he's monitoring, you know, these NGOs that promoting BDS, and some of them, not surprisingly or surprisingly, being funded by government. What he's doing is trying to find linkage.
I know that, like, Qatar has been funding a variety of these, and
Bidiuk.
Iran actually, through back channels, has been funding some
and,
of these.
And sometimes also friendly countries.
And then countries that we like to think of as democracies and
yeah.
allies.
So I think organization like NGO Monitor and others, like, they're trying to really open our eyes and to understand that this is not a small, you know, a bunch of hippies that want just justice and peace. It's really a very organized approach, I would say, a dangerous process to delegitimization of Israel. And the end goal is destroying Israel, like, no less than that. And that, I think, you can find every week a very big article on the Israeli TV, you know, channels, Channel 2 or Channel 10, that really, really analyzing the phenomena, which you, like, a year or two ago, never heard about it. Like, it's really become something that Israel dealing with it on a daily, I would say, daily basis.
Thanks, Oshrat. Something to keep an eye on, something to be aware of, and something to be concerned about. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, you recently returned from Tampere, Finland, among other parts of Europe and elsewhere. We were talking about the attitude of Europeans towards Israel and the transformation, particularly in Northern Europe, but really all over, towards how they understand Israel and what it means to them. You had a conversation with a 17-year-old high school kid who's now 6'8" tall, and you were talking about, I assume, Israel.
Right. So what was very interesting was, this is a family that is not strongly religious, but this particular kid, firstborn son, the older of two brothers, besides having amazingly fluent English, is active in his Lutheran church youth group. And a lot of his fellow youth group members just came back from sort of a pilgrimage trip to Israel and were very, very impressed. And he was very curious and said, "You've been to Israel, right? Didn't you live there once?" I mean, he's an amazing memory. He's a very, very smart kid. So we started talking about Israel, and he said that he would love to do more than just a week or two of a visit, that he would actually like to be on some kind of exchange program or live there. So I told him about the old movement in the 60s and 70s of Hitnadvut and how massively Northern Europeans participated in that. He said, "You know, I've never heard of that. Why did that disappear? Did they shut it down? And I told him what we were talking about last week, that it had been a very popular thing, very common among northern and northwestern Europeans, as you pointed out, Germans, Dutch, not only Scandinavians, until the seesaw of propaganda, public relations, whatever you want to call it, seemed to tilt in favor of the Palestinian narrative.
Yeah, it might have even been around Lebanon sometime in that period, even before
right.
that a little
bit. It was
bit.
Also after Israel started losing wars and seeming like a more dangerous place. You know, in the late 60s, particularly in the wake of the Six-Day War in 67, Israel seemed like this invincible, very safe, very self-confident place, and it was very attractive to youngsters from Northwestern Europe. And by the end of the 70s or the early 80s, it became much less attractive. Plus, the Israelis themselves did less recruiting because they thought it was, you know, more trouble than it was worth. The programs still exist in a few places in much smaller numbers, and I think they screen candidates more carefully. Anyway, this kid was interested in doing this, and he said, like, do you think I could pass the screening? I said, absolutely. Your English is perfect. You have good manners. You've never been in trouble. You know, you're active in your church youth group. But what would you see yourself getting out of it? He said, well, I would get a better understanding of the country where really all the great religions originated, Judaism, Christianity, and to some extent Islam. And you know, Jerusalem's a holy city to all three religions, and I want to have a firsthand understanding that goes beyond the propaganda of what the issues are that confront Israelis and why Israel sometimes seems to act in ways that are contrary to its founding principles. Well, this was an amazing statement to come out of the mouth of a 17-year-old because, yes, Israel does sometimes seem to act in ways that run counter to its founding principles. And, yes, it is worth making a big effort to try to understand why.
And I would hope that more Europeans would take that approach and explore rather than accept some of the propaganda, which unfortunately is now ubiquitous in Europe. And Israel has a long way to go on public relations there.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
The Temple Emmanuel Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you're interested in going on this great journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, tojewishradio18@gmail, or call 327-4501 for more information and an itinerary and how to sign up. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rabbi Bloom was testing the kids in the religious school class to see if they understood what it meant to go to heaven. So he asked them, "Boys and girls, if I sold my house and car and gave all the money to the shul, would that get me into heaven?" "No," the kids shouted. "Okay," said the rabbi. "If I cleaned the shul every day, washed the stained glass windows inside and out, kept every sitter, every prayer book neat and tidy, would that let me go to heaven?" Again, the kids all shouted, "No." Rabbi Bloom was beginning to really enjoy this test. "Well then, children," he asked, "if I was the kindest person in the whole world to animals, and if I gave pieces of halva and kosher candy to every boy and girl in the city, and if I promised never to shout at any of you, would that get me into heaven?" Again, all the children shouted, "No." "Well," Rabbi Bloom continued, "then how can I get to heaven?" With that, Aaron, who was 6 years old, shouted, "You've got to be dead, Rabbi." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, we celebrate the final Shabbat of the year, which means that our Torah portion is one of the greatest sections of the whole year, Nitzavim. You stand here today, all of you, oldest to the youngest, wealthiest to the poorest, most famous to the most humble, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God, you and every generation to come who will be descended from you. You are all engaged in this great Brit, the covenant that affirms that you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. This universal covenant establishes that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that is carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It is an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit, shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men here, not always the case at the time of the Torah, or even today. So what is the content of this commandment, the mitzvah that we are now to observe? At the climax of our Torah portion, we are told, "Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher nachim etzavcha hayom lo nifleit hi mimcha," look, "this commandment I command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, 'Who among us can go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us that we may do it?' It's not across the sea that you should say, 'Who among us can cross the sea and bring it back to us to do it?' No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Perhaps the mitzvah, the commandment that Nitzavim speaks about, is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or more precisely, of the presence of God in the here and now. In this season, we prepare for our tshuva, repentance. But if God is here right now, then tshuva is a way of becoming aware that this Torah of God's is already here in our mouths and in our hearts. Tshuva simply means God says, "Return to me again, become aware of me always being in your life." It's a great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah and always in the year. When we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish, our guest, the very inspirational Justice Richard Bernstein of the Michigan Supreme Court, a blind judge of the highest court in the state, who is also an 18-time marathoner and a triathlete, and who will be here in Tucson, Arizona, explains how he does so many extraordinary things that even sighted people cannot. Find out when we come back in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The white supremacist who killed three people outside two Jewish facilities in a Kansas City suburb in April of 2014 was found guilty of capital murder. The jury in Johnson County, Kansas, took less than 2 hours to reach its verdict in the trial of Frazier Glenn Miller, also known as Frazier Glenn Cross. The trial now enters a death penalty phase. Miller was convicted last week of 3 counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Riet Underwood, who is 14 years old, his grandfather, William Corporon, who is 69, outside the Jewish Community Center of Kansas City in Overland Park, Kansas, as well as Terry Lamano, 53 years old, outside the Village Shalom Assisted Living Facility, all murdered in April of 2014. Not one of the victims was Jewish, but Miller assumed they were when he shot them. Miller, leading his own defense, claimed during the trial last week that the Jews have committed genocide against white people. Fascinating. And that they control both the media and Wall Street. I had no criminal intent, he said. I had a patriotic intent to stop genocide against my people. I hate Jews. They are the ones who destroy us. Looks like his hatred will be silenced. Miller was also found guilty of aggravated assault for pointing a shotgun at a woman and asking if she was Jewish. And, of course, of shooting into the JCC. In Israel, an Israeli soldier was wounded during clashes between soldiers and Palestinians following an Israeli raid in the West Bank city of Jenin last week. Israeli soldiers, as well as officers from the Shin Bet Security Service and Israeli police, came to Jenin to arrest a senior Hamas operative, the IDF said. Security forces surrounded the home where the operative was hiding, ultimately demolishing it when the wanted Hamas guy refused to come out. Following the arrest, hundreds of Palestinians rioted, throwing rocks and firebombs that led to the injury of the soldier, as well as at least of 5 Palestinians hurt. The IDF is investigating the circumstance surrounding the shooting of the soldier. Hours after the arrest, rockets were fired from the Gaza Strip towards Israel, triggering a warning, code red, in towns on the southern border, but the rockets actually landed in Gaza. A group affiliated with the Islamic State claimed responsibility for firing the rockets at Israel, saying it was in retaliation for the Jenin raid. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Justice Richard Bernstein is on the Michigan Supreme Court. He's a lawyer and a multi-marathoner. He's run 18 marathons, and I think you've completed a triathlon as well, if I read correctly.
I've actually been blessed to have had the opportunity to have completed a full Ironman competition, which is a 2.4-mile swim, followed by a 112-mile bike, to be completed by a 26.2-mile run.
Now, I have completed one marathon. That was plenty for me. You are motivated in a way that the rest of us aren't. There must be extraordinary measures taken. The 2-mile swim alone in a triathlon is really a challenge. That's why it goes first. Can you talk about how that works for you?
Sure. So I want you to imagine, if you would, what it would be like to be swimming in total darkness. You don't have any idea where you started. You don't have any idea where you're going, but most terrifyingly, you don't have any idea where you are. You keep getting kicked in the face by all the other swimmers who don't realize that you have a disability. You try to surface, but you can't because there's other people immediately above you. And I think the most difficult part is when other swimmers become entangled in the rope that connects you to your guide, and when they become ensnared, the rope starts dragging you below the surface. And literally, you can feel the waves come rush down upon you. And you try to get oxygen, but it's impossible because the rope starts pulling you below the surface. And I think what you come to realize in a very spiritual manner is that it is through those kinds of life experiences that Hashem will always give you what you need when you need it. You won't have anything more, but you'll never have anything less. And the reason I do these competitions, the 18 marathons, the full Ironman competition in Coeur d'Alene, the Israelman competition in Eilat, is I really do believe that facing these challenges and being scared and dealing with the pain and struggle, I really feel that that brings you closer to Hashem. And for me, that's why I do these things, because it allows you to have that true sense of connection.
When a court case, shifting back to justice, when a court case comes to you that involves a disability, do you have to recuse yourself? Is there anything special that you need to do in that setting?
No, absolutely not. In fact, it's all about experiences. And that's what's so critical about being on the Supreme Court is that I serve with six other people on our state's highest court. And the reason I ran for this position was because I truly believed that it was important to bring a new perspective, a new understanding, and a new awareness amongst the court to people who have disabilities. And I thought that was really essential because as a practicing attorney for 15 years, I found that the judiciary didn't have a real clear understanding of these types of challenges or these types of issues that people with disabilities and special needs face. And I think that that perspective doesn't just apply to people with disabilities, but it applies to allowing for the population to be better served by the judiciary in an overall sense. And I think that has been a very important thing. If you have seven people who are all the same, who have all the same life experiences, who do all the same things, you are not going to have appropriate representation. So when you're deciding a case that has a tremendous impact and a tremendous effect on people's lives, you want the greater perspective as possible. So I just believe that being blind and having a disability just enhances the court because it allows for it to have an awareness and understanding of issues that, but for the disability, it would not have been aware of.
Getting into law school was a challenge for you. You actually went up against sort of the whole LSAT system. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. So the law school admissions test is required for all potential law school applicants who wish to attend law school. It's very important to identify that this is not the bar exam. Nobody has any issue with the bar exam. The bar exam is completely fine. It's a knowledge-based exam, which nobody objects to. The issue is with the LSAT. The LSAT is what you take just to get into law school. Now, the LSAT has no bearing on law school. It has no bearing on your ability to practice law. It is a standardized test that's administered by the Law School Admissions Council. And ultimately, this is just, for all intents and purposes, a profit-making kind of entity that exists between the American Bar Association and the Law School Admissions Council. And the LSAC is a private company. It's important to note that. So in order to go to law school, you have to sit for the LSAT. Now, a question on the LSAT would go as follows. This is what's called the logical games section. A logical games question would be the following. A, B, C, D, E, and F are seated at a dinner party. If A is seated next to C and B is seated next to D, where is A in relation to E if C is next to B? On the exam, it actually says that you are required to diagram the answer in the space that is provided for you. So it says you are required to diagram. So the idea that you're going to require a blind person to draw pictures and graphs, I think just speaks for itself, that even if you give the exam in Braille, even if you give the exam on tape, even if you give it with unlimited time, it doesn't matter because if you are required to draw pictures in order to solve the question, I don't see how a blind person can take the exam at the same level as a sighted person, and that has had a profound impact on the numbers of disabled people who are attending law school today, which ultimately has impacted the kind of laws and kind of civil rights that we're able to have. So I think the LSAT has been a tragedy in terms of the legal profession because it has inhibited so many people who would, but for this exam, be practicing attorneys and fighting for the civil rights of those with disabilities and special needs, but because of this exam, aren't able to do so.
Are you the only judge who has ever been elected to the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame and Museum?
I believe that is the case, and I believe also I am the youngest Supreme Court justice in the United States, and the only blind Supreme Court justice in the United States.
So, very important question. What's next?
Well, I think for me, I was elected to this position by the voters across the state of Michigan in November to a term that began in January. And my focus is that I just have to be an outstanding judge. That is my absolute focus. I mean, the voters here in the state of Michigan have given me a tremendous opportunity. Now, I have to work each and every day to live up to that opportunity, to live up to those expectations. And my goal is to be the absolute best judge that I can possibly be. And I focus on that each and every day.
Tell us a little bit about your Jewish background and how it motivates you. You've alluded to it a couple of times already.
Well, it's funny because I literally just stepped off the plane from Israel. So you're catching me at the perfect time. I just got back.
Welcome back.
Literally, well, thank you. And I literally just got off the plane just like an hour ago from the Holy Land. And I was actually in Israel for a month. And it was an incredible, incredible experience because I was working with the Israeli Defense Forces. And what we're doing is we're helping to create units within the IDF that can allow for people with disabilities who want to serve to have the opportunity to do so. And it's a full-scale integration program that is being hosted by the IDF in order to allow, again, this idea that people with disabilities and special needs who want to serve their land and who want to serve their country should have the opportunity to do so. And just a tremendous program. And we're working within the IDF because by integrating the IDF, you help to integrate all of Israeli culture. And in this trip, it was a great experience to both do the IDF as well as work with the venture capital firms to talk about impact investing, as well as meeting with Knesset members to talk about the civil rights of the disabled in Israel and new and pending legislation that's going to be proposed by the Knesset. And the other thing I really enjoyed was having a chance to spend a lot of time with the Israeli press to highlight these issues and to highlight the types of things that are happening in Israel that affect people with disabilities. So it's an incredible experience whenever you go there, but to have the opportunity to really be a part of kind of the Israeli process in terms of helping to shift and change the dynamic and change the paradigm and change laws that affect the disabled was an incredible experience. And it's something that I'm looking forward to doing when I have to return back to Israel in just a couple of weeks to continue speaking on the civil rights of the disabled and hopefully allow for the Knesset to push forward this pending legislation in a way that I think is going to really make a difference for the disabled.
I think it's incredibly important work, and Israel actually has some progress to make in the area of accommodating the disabled. I want to thank Justice Richard Bernstein for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about your work?
Oh, I would be delighted. You know, I think the best place that people can go to visit is if you just simply go to the Michigan Supreme Court website. And I imagine if you just simply type in my name, Richard Bernstein, and Michigan Supreme Court, it will let you read all of the decisions that we've been involved with, the opinions that have been written. And it will also showcase all the different things that we're doing kind of in the community on an extracurricular basis. But I think what's great about a show like this is that we're all looking for connection. And you know, Rabbi, an easy life does not always correspond to a good one. And I think the key message is that sometimes if God gives you certain challenges and difficulties, he might not be giving you an easy life, but he is giving you one that is incredibly fulfilled.
Fulfilling, meaningful, and really why we're here. Thanks so much. We look forward to meeting you in person. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be Kenneth Marcus, author of the brand new book, The Definition of Anti-Semitism. Our playout this morning comes from the Fountainheads, an Israeli youth singing and performing group from Ain Pratt. It's called Dip Your Apple for Rosh Hashanah. It's a parody of a Shakira song. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good final week of this 5775 year, and a week, we pray, of peace.
A new year rising, a new beginning. Lift your head up, turn yourself round, the world is spinning. Feel the magic.